Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets for revenge he wants.
Beardley is making a move. It has come down to this. Beardley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Beardley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's goal for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say lightning doesn't strike twice.
Welcome to season two of the Running Our Mouths podcast. We've got some good news for you guys. Alex Lohr had his baby. Baby Burke was brought into this world just last week. So we're going to give Alex the next couple weeks off from the podcast. Coming to you this week in his place is Kevin Liao, formerly used to run Psyched Up, Spiked Up, and contributed to Flow Track back when we were there as well. And Mitch Kastoff, 13 weeks strong on this podcast with me. So we're going to get right to it. Recapping Florida relays, we'll talk about Stanford. And then this is our 2015 power ranking show. We're going to go position race by race with each distance event. And we're going to tell you who's got the best chances of making it to Beijing for the World Championships. We're going to have full documents out, the full text document of these power rankings out on Tuesday and Wednesday on Sporting News, so be sure to check those out. But I'll give you guys a quick recap from Florida relays. I'll start this off. Tori Bowie showing that 2014 was no joke, picks things off where she left off last year before the injury bug kind of struck and, you know, made it, you know, put the season to a little bit of a shaky end. She runs 22.61 for a new world leading time in the 200, so I think it's safe to say that she's in the mix for a world championship roster spot for Team USA, you know, maybe alongside Allyson Felix, taking the place of, you know, maybe someone who's on the outs now, someone like Carmelita Jeter or something like that. Like we said at our U.S. Championship recap show, Alex was very high on Alik Harris as one guy to watch in the U.S. 100-meter hurdles team. And so that's probably another one of those tough teams to make in the U.S. He just narrowly beats Jason Richardson and David Oliver. They were all separated by 0.01 seconds each for first, second, and third. It's absolutely insane. So now throw in guys like Aries Merritt, Ryan Wilson, Devin Allen into the mix, and oh gosh, like, men's 110-meter hurdles is going to be awesome. A little bit of distance action. We saw Chanel Price. We're going to get to her in a bit when we get discuss the power rankings. She runs 2:02 to edge out Natoya Gould. That's the fastest she's ever run in April, and you know that's a positive because that puts her right where I think she needs to be for a similar you know, pace that she was at in 2014, you know, when she opened up with a strong race in Doha. And then last thing I guess I have is Georgianne Rolin runs a 400-meter PR of 52.08, just shaving off maybe a second or 0.01 off of personal best. I mean, it's something that'll help for hurdling. But that's pretty much Florida relays in a nutshell. There's lots of sprint stars there. Justin Gatlin was in the mix as well. But let's flip the coin to some distance action. We had Kevin Liao on the ground at Stanford. Kevin, what are the goods from Stanford?
First of all, thanks guys for having me on. I think this is the most hyped debut on a podcast since Jeremy Warner in the 800 meters. So really good to be here. But being in Stanford is another perfect evening there, no wind. I think the highlight of the night had to be Shalane Flanagan in that 10,000 meters. It was very similar to 2 years ago when she prepped for Boston about 2 weeks before with a basically 10K time trial. She ran 31.04 2 years ago, this year 31.09, but still very similar races. She kind of just went to the front and started cranking out 75s. The biggest difference being this time she had someone on her tail in Galetti Burka, who's one of the top 1,500 and 5,000 runners we've seen on the track. Burka ends up beating Flanagan. It was 31.08 to 31.09. I think some of the biggest takeaways, and we have some audio which we'll plug in here. Flanagan spoke to the media after the race and talked about a couple things. First of all, she talked about how her preparations were different this year from past seasons.
I actually feel I feel a little more, my buildup has been a little shorter, so I'm like mentally a little bit more fresh. So I think that transcends to the body as well. So I feel like really a big momentum going into it. Sometimes I've just felt like I've been just like surviving in the last few weeks, and I can't wait to just get it going because I'm tired. And I feel a little bit more momentum because I've had a shorter buildup, which I think is a blessing in disguise.
Was that done intentionally?
No, it wasn't. I had a little hiccup in my training in January, but I've never had any setbacks in my training over 10 years, so I have so much strength behind me, so yeah.
And so, like she just said, a shorter buildup. To me, that's very intriguing because in the past two Bostons, she's says she's gone in tired, and so maybe this time with fresher legs, she'll go in feeling a little better and maybe have a different result. You guys have any thoughts?
Also, Rita Cheptoo won't be in the mix, and I think that helps. I think she didn't even want to mention Rita Cheptoo by name, I think, in that interview that I got a chance to listen to. So different mindset for Shalane. Also, this is going to be her first race of 2015, which is a little different than 2013 when she had, I guess, a half under her belt at this point. So really interesting new approach by Jerry and Shalane, but you know, hopefully it'll work. What else happened out there in Stanford?
And hitting on Flanagan again, you just mentioned new approach. She also did add in this about her race tactics.
Well, there's one particular woman that won't be in the race, so that'll change the dynamics tremendously. Sure. So I'm excited about that. I think it's going to be a much tighter race in terms of the finish, which I'm excited about as well. I think it's going to make for a really great event. I think it'll be maybe a little bit more tactical this year. I think it's just going to be overall a closer race just because everyone's going to be, there's like maybe 10 sub-223 women for the marathon, so it's the fastest Boston Marathon field ever, so I think it's going to be pretty spectacular.
So the fact that she says that she thinks it's going to be a more tactical race to me means she's not going to go to the front like she did last year. If you remember, she led for about the first 20 miles, took it out halfway in 69 minutes, which led everyone else to a really fast time, but I think really sacrificed her own chance to win. So I would probably anticipate her taking a different approach this time around.
I'll chime in. Why not? Since the fields for Boston came out, no matter how good Shalane is, and she's very good, she still has to beat two women who have gone sub 220. Now, she's run 221. It's very fast. But Mary DiBaba and, you know, Bizanesh Deba, they're both very skilled. They're both very talented, tactically sound, and quick. And so, for me, just hearing that she's doing a shorter buildup, it sounds like, I don't know. I would prefer to hear something a little more positive coming out of that. It just seems like, oh, well, something went wrong. We're fine now. No buildup is perfect, and I know that. But do I want her to win? Yes, I want her to win. I want her to win from now until forever. But it's still, I think it's still just as big as an undertaking as when the fields came out.
Just to respond to that, you know, we've seen Meb in the past. He has so many years of miles in his legs. And Shalane did note that she's pretty much trained injury-free for the last 10 years. And the accumulation of those miles really prepares you kind of for anything. So my guess is this shorter buildup won't hurt her. And in fact, I'm a little more optimistic. I think it, you know, she'll go in fresher. And I think this will be more positive for her than any downsides there are.
Now, the women's 5K out there at Stanford was something else that was entertaining. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was a race that Morgan Eucene paced for the first 3K. And, you know, for the first, I'd say 4K or so, we didn't really think that the A standard, which is 1520, was in the cards. But the top three, which were Gabe Grunewald, Nicole Cifuentes, and Alicia Williams, really hammered the last 600 meters or so, and they ended up all dipping under that World A standard, with Gabe Grunewald with kind of her signature kick coming through at the end to take the win. It was pretty notable on a couple of levels. Friday was the fifth anniversary of her first being diagnosed with cancer, so it was kind of a symbolic night for Gabe. After a up and down 2014, when she had her craziness indoors with that 3K title, and then just couldn't find her form outdoors, it looks like she's on the right track and will certainly be in the mix for that 1500 world team.
And that's something that we'll discuss with the power rankings. Now, are you guys ready to get into these?
One last note, Chris, on the one shout out for me is Caitlin Goodman, who PR'd by 51 seconds in the 10,000. She was kind of in that chase pack with Shalane and Shalane up front with Burka. She was running with the likes of Bazzari and Dom Scott, and over the last mile or so really rolled and ended up setting that huge PR, the Pride of Davis, California. So just got to give her a shout out.
And of course, I mean, I feel like a lot of people were happy to see Jermaine Fernandez back and get the victory. But I mean, there's not enough love for the other guys in the heat that ran faster than him. I think that's just something that we should note, that Jermaine Fernandez wasn't the fastest guy that day over 1500 meters. He might have just had the best finish line pose. All right, let's get into these power rankings. So every year, Kevin Liao puts together power rankings for the U.S. athletes and their chances of making the world championship team. So this year on Sporting News, we're going to have those rankings for the distance events with everyone from 800 meters up. So let's start off with the women's 800. Now, Kevin has them listed as 1, Ajay Wilson, 2, Brenda Martinez, 3, Chanel Price, 4, Laura Raessler, 5, Molly Beckwith, and the dark horse of Alicia Montano, and a pool of others to watch would be Maggie Vessey, Heather Kampf, Lauren Wallace, and just, you know, we have a lot of these names are probably going to change maybe by the time we talk here, and then when we get them published in tomorrow. So, Kevin, what was your reasoning behind the, you know, those 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 names?
Yeah, I went with Wilson and Martinez as the first two. They've had the best track record over the last 2 years. Both have made world finals. Both have been in the top 5 in the world. So those were pretty easy picks for me. From there, it was difficult. The most difficult thing was where to put Alicia Montano. She obviously had a child last year, ran pretty well indoors in that 600 at USA Indoors. Now, the 600 is what we all joke as like her perfect event because she likes to go out hard. We've yet to see what she can do in the full 8. If I was to put my money on it right now, I would say it'll be a battle between Montano and Price for that third spot. But certainly lots and lots of talent in the mix, including Maggie Vessey, who just ran 201.6 at Stanford in on a pretty windy track yesterday.
Mitch, your thoughts on those top 5?
It's tough. It's been getting tougher, especially the last year or so. I agree. It's hard to place. It's like kind of like when Paula came back from pregnancy and comes out and bangs out a quick half marathon. I don't know much about being pregnant or coming back from it, so I can't speak from personal experience, but it's definitely stacked right there. I think the person that can fluctuate the most is Laura Raessler, just because we saw her dominate the collegiate ranks and then do a little summer series as a pro, but the woman just has such a fierce kick that probably more pronounced than the others-ish. Just because they all look pretty. For the everyone else, they're fast. But for her, I feel like she has that Nitro cheat code button that she can press, and she just goes, you know, really quick. And so can she, right now she's in 4th. Could she be 2nd? Yeah. Could she be like 7th in a race? I mean, maybe, but she has the most to gain, and I guess the most to lose.
I think we're going to get a much clearer picture, I think, of this field after that Drake Relays 800, which is stacked. And I think I've talked about that in the last like three or so podcasts. But I mean, it's going to be a great race. I like Chanel Price is the name that really I like in that, you know. But three, I think she might have the third spot. She ran 159 in her season opener off of Indoor Fitness last year. And so she's kind of on that same progression with that two flat now in April. So maybe she can get to 159 by May. So we'll see where she's at kind of after this injury. She was in a boot for a while. And she, the last time we saw her outdoors before all this, last year her season was cut short at the U.S. Championships. And all eight of her indoor and outdoor 800 meter races were under 203. So I think that's a pretty consistent season for Chanel Price. And you're right, I think we're kind of underestimating Alicia Montano's shape after with her as a dark horse. She did run 127 and 126 for 600 indoors. What's really interesting to me about her is whether or not she's going to keep that front running style in 2015, because I think it was Leah Wallace who mentioned it to me 2 years ago. She was like, yeah, you know, that can't work forever. She pretty much might become, she becomes a rabbit eventually, maybe, and we saw it at the World Championships. That's what happened. So I think the women's 800 is going to be interesting.
Elise's always been kind of the alpha dog in terms of she takes charge. And when she was out last year, Chanel Price took that reign. And so whenever they're in the same race, I'll be very interested to see who goes to the front, because they both want it.
Now, men's 800 was a race where some people saw a change of tactics. We saw Simmons become more of a front runner in 2013. So men's 800, who do you guys... so the way Kevin has it is Solomon 1, Simmons 2, Brandon Johnson 3. Those are your top three from 2013. Kaz Loxham 4th, Elijah Greer 5th, Dark Horse of Andrew Weeding, and others are Haroon Abda, Ryan Martin, Charles Jock, and Tyler Mulder. So Kevin, again, what was your reasoning behind that whole selection?
Again, top two are pretty solid. These are the guys who've been there. From there, I really have no idea. I put Johnson there because he had a pretty solid indoor race this year. He's the only other guy, I believe, who's broken 144. So I put him there, but I'm not too confident with that pick.
Man, you're saying a lot of locks. When I say the word lock, I usually mean it in a definitive manner, and I do not consider your top two a lock. Your one, I do. Your two, I do not. I know that Nick has had a stellar career, but I mean, we a crack in the armor. His streak ended last year, two years ago,
but then he went on to win silver, so I wouldn't really put much credence into
I know, but just the way he is going out and performing and what I can see from his training, I'm just not... That was peak Simmons. He's never going to get back to that point, and that just logically means it's going to be downhill from there, and so I want to bump up. I feel a guy like Tyler Mulder, who I think I picked in 2013 to make the team, he's a guy that is always on the cusp of making it, and now with the addition of Mo Amon in that group, I think he sees a little what it takes to get to that next level, and I would put him up probably in that top five. Brandon Johnson, I don't know. Kaz Loxham, he's got the 600, but it's hard to say. That being said, bump Simmons down, move Mulder up, and Elijah Greer is a wild card. I don't know. He's running like 144, like 8 or 9. So if for him to be effective, he's got to go at least a second under that.
Mitch, I also share the same concerns for Nick Simmons after, you know, Beer Mile stuff, Ninja Warrior. It's, he's got to get his focus back on the track, and hopefully it'll all be there by the time the U.S. Championship rolls around. But anything can happen. It could be the first year Simmons doesn't make the team. But you stole the words out of my mouth for Tyler Mulder, because this could be his year. 2014 was a really cringeworthy year for Mulder. I would call it 2013 Robbie Andrews-esque, because 146.80 was his best. He did get some Diamond League love and some invites earlier in the year. But the last race he had was May 30th. And hopefully we're in for a transformed Tyler Mulder again, you know, training with Mo Aman, Has to Help, and Haroon Abda, those guys. The thing about 2013 is that he finally found his groove after the U.S. Championships. He ran four 144 performances within almost 2 weeks in July to close out his season. The only thing is that with a U.S. Championship, you need to be ready to run 144 by June. And that's the thing that I think a lot of the OTC guys saw in 2013 was that they weren't in peak shape until after the U.S. Championships. So hopefully that all gets fixed. I mean, they're all doing some hard work at Flagstaff, but I see Tyler Mulder as maybe that third guy. Or, yeah, Tyler Mulder could be the third guy for me.
One thing I do have to say about guys that, Mitch, like you mentioned, guys who are always on the cusp, is that if they're always on the cusp, there's a reason, and they tend not to get over that.
Just because you say it doesn't make it true. Counter-argument.
All right. Let's move on to the women's 15. So this is one where the U.S. is going to send four people because Jenny Simpson has the Diamond League bye. So the way Kevin has in the power rankings as of right now is Jenny Simpson 1, Shannon Roberry 2, Mary Kane 3, with kind of the argument that talent never goes away. 4, Katie Mackey. 5, Gabe Grunwald. Dark horse of Shelby Houlihan. And the other pool is Trinneer Moser, Morgan Eucene, and Alexa Ephraimson. So Kevin, I mean, Trinneer Moser in the pool, after winning it 2 years ago,
I would say she's a different runner. Last year we didn't quite see the same spark that we saw, that she had in her first year when she was with Alberto in 2013. Right now I see Mackey and Grunwald as, just an edge ahead, not a whole lot, but I'd say just a little bit ahead. To me, the Mackey Grunwald Brooks showdown is intriguing because they both kind of finished college around the same time and are on the same development curve as post collegians. And so this year will kind of be a test to see who has the edge.
Mitch, thoughts on Mary Kane in that third spot after, you know, maybe a subpar indoor season?
Oh man. I don't know who wrote it, but someone wrote talent doesn't go away, which is my favorite and least favorite quote for anything, just because I used to believe in it, and now I don't know if I do, and now I'm kind of doing it. So Mary Kane on third, I'm just going to chalk it up to her adjusting to the college freshman life here in beautiful Portland. Being away from home, losing some of that support system. Yeah, she's closer to the Nike and whatnot, but it's hard because as a data-driven man like myself, it would be irrational for me to put her above people who could and have been performing better. But I think while she's not contending for the win, and she might, but she'll be in that third spot. It's hard for me to look at Morgan Eucene's name down there, but That's the breaks. Those are the falls you get, or something like that.
Now, for me, I think it's interesting because I was looking at that dark horse pool, and then I checked out PRs, and someone like Shelby Houlihan, Alexa Ephraimson, they would have to chase. Their PRs are not there just yet for the A standard, which would make things kind of reminiscent of 2013 with Corey McGee. Which I kind of liked. I liked that surprise that we had someone out of the collegiate ranks come out there and make, you know, take that third spot. So for me, I don't think it will happen this year. I think this is the year where Katie Mackey, I think, makes the team in that third spot. Because, I mean, one, Shannon Roberry looked unstoppable during indoor season. I think Mary Kane and Alberto will get it right for outdoor season. And then from there, yeah, Katie Mackey would be the third one, with Gabe Grunwald also as a very strong racer. You know, she's not afraid to bump and grind out there during the race. So I'll take Katie Mackey third. So I kind of like where these pair rankings are at. Let's move on to the men's 1500, which is, Mitch, don't you remember picking the men's 1500 in Des Moines? Remind everyone how crazy that day was. That morning, you were so stressed out, and you had it written on a coffee cup, I believe.
I wasn't that stressed out, because someone's got to speak the gospel at some point, and I'll do it again, to be honest. Whoever wrote this has Leo Manzano at 2. Dude's getting a little older. He can't whip out the blades all the time. You're going to put a guy like Jordan McNair as the dark horse? You're going to put a guy like Pat Casey as 5? Manzano can't rest on his laurels. I'm not impressed with him. I haven't been for a while. Is someone going to say he's a lock for the team? Because I'm going to punch you through my computer.
Well, you can slap me again because he's a lock for the team, and this is why. He's looked like crap in the past before USA's. I mean, we haven't seen anyone really race the spring yet, so can't really say either way. But he's looked like crap before, and he pulls it off. And until he doesn't, he's there.
Yeah, I just feel like that goes against what I have tattooed on my chest, which is you're only as good as your last race. So... Centro.
Except if you're Leo Manzano at USA.
When he doesn't make it this year, I will be the only one. Yeah, it's a feel-good story. Yeah, you know, I like the guy. Is he going to make it this year? You know, I don't think so. I'm not feeling it.
And Meb's done too, so.
So, Mitch, even after... that vine I have of I will never, ever doubt you again, Leo Manzano. You're coming on the show here for the World Championship Preview Show, and you're going to doubt him?
Whoa, this is not the World Championship Preview Show. This is the Season 1 rankings. So I'm telling you, far out from now, no, I don't think he's going to make it. Is my opinion going to be the same thing as the week before USA's? Oh, I don't know. I'm going to see what happens. That's what a logical person would do. But right now, I don't like him on the team. If it's really super tactical, Lear, McNamara. I mean, Pat Casey, he's a guy that I want to put him higher. I just don't know where he can fit.
All right. So when I was looking at this, it's the most fun event to pick, I think, because you could slot names here and there. I noticed there weren't any collegiates in there because I think 2013 was a special year. Mitch, I remember we went back and forth on Mac Fleet and whether he would make the team. He was really awesome. That he was spot on that year and kept it going for a while. So if we had to pick, I just want to make it a little interesting, some collegiates to throw into the pool of runners. You got your Christian Serratos, you got your Peter Callahan. Maybe if Cheswick figures out his citizenship situation and gets his eligibility for USA's by 2015, you could throw him in the mix. So Callahan was 4th last year. A lot of people love him, even though he hasn't really had that one race. I've been on the Callahan boat for a while too. Sam Penseller was ahead of him. So those are the top two returners. Christian Serratos had the awesome indoor season. Hopefully he could, you know, after this injury that he's got now that sidelined him for the first couple weeks of outdoor, he'll be back and picking things off where he left off. But, you know, just some collegiates to maybe watch in the first couple rounds. But I guess the one I want to watch, and hopefully he can be healthy, is, you know, another OTC guy who couldn't put it together at USA's, and that was J-Mac. J-Mac didn't make it out of the prelims in 2013. You know, his best performance last year was a second place finish at the Prefontaine mile. Not even like the big one. It was like the invitational one that Leo won. So it was another situation where 2013 didn't peak at the right time. Ended up running 3:34 in that magic race in Ortigam, which P.S. if you're looking for a fast place to run and you're chasing, Ortigam's going to be the spot this summer. I think just try and do it, relive that whole thing again. So I'm going to put J-Mac as my dark horse pick. I do like Centro. I like Leo. And, you know, that third spot's going to be, you know, a kick. It's going to be that last lap. Whoever's in it. Again, we could end up with another Matt Elliott, Ford Palmer type story. That's just the magic of the 1500, I think, in the U.S. So, yeah, that's something that we could probably come back to the week before USA's.
Yeah, and it's really tough for a college guy to really have a shot. I'm trying to think back. I think 2009 when Dorian Olrey, he was the last collegiate to make the 1500 team. It's just so deep amongst the professionals at this point. I have a hard time believing any of them will get in there.
Yeah, if anything, like I would put their percentages at, you know, 10% or lower to even make the team. 5% or lower is what someone would put it at. Let's go over some order barriers. So women's steeple. Kevin has it down as Emma Coburn, Garcia second, Higginson third, Bush fourth, Pratt fifth, dark horse of Leo Connor, and the others is Kip, Frenick, and Rachel Johnson. So, Kevin, I guess one, Coburn's the lock. I guess are all three of us on that same page?
You have to ask Mitch, you know. He doesn't believe in these things, so.
Yes, I believe in locks, but only when they're right. And so, yes, I believe Emma Coburn is a lock.
Okay, and then from there, you've got Garcia in second and Higginson third. I think this is where, so why is Leo Connor the dark horse, Kevin, and not already slotted into those, in the top five?
I think one could make a really good argument why she should be in the top three. The long collegiate season does worry me a lot. With that being said, there are a lot of similarities between the season that she's having so far with the season that Emma Coburn had when she also won the indoor mile title going wider wire. So certainly possible. I try to go with historical trends more times than not. So that was my rationale behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I'd put Leo Connor maybe in that two position on a really good day. She's only behind Jenny Simpson as the NCAA mile queen. She wants to focus on the steeple. I could see her breaking 9:30. And as noted by Let's Run, I think the only people in college who run faster than her were probably is Jenny and Emma Coburn. You know, maybe I'll put Garcia second, just as a courtesy for, you know, her experience. But Leo would be my third, which. It pains me because Ashley Higginson's an awesome person, but I think Leo Connor has a good shot. A name that isn't there is Colleen Quigley, who 2013, she didn't compete at USA's, but probably had a good shot of making the team. She was studying abroad that summer, and those plans had already been set, so she didn't compete. So I think if she can get it together during this outdoor season, maybe in the NCAAs, Colleen Quigley, another name to throw into the mix. Mitch, anyone really stick out to you from this event?
I once made the mistake of picking, I have to look back, but I think I picked Stephanie Garcia over Ashley Higginson. And then Stephanie wilted in the heat and Ashley rose to finish second. And I saw her later that night and she outed me in front of everyone. And so if you're not listening to this podcast, how do you know I'm talking about you? That's the big question we have to ask ourselves. Coburn is a lock. I would bump Higginson to second. And Steph Garcia, I mean, she's run 9:24. She has very legit credentials. But something I learned in college was the best kind of steeplers are milers, just pure milers. So I have to go with Leo Connor in third. Yeah, she doesn't have the same championship credentials as the other girls, and she's less seasoned, long collegiate season, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I'll make up another, well, not make up another idiom, but I'll just say, striker ball is hot. She rarely has a bad race, cross notwithstanding, that's just like an outlier. And if it gets tactical, I'd like the wheels there.
Now, let's move on to the men's steeplechase, where, Mitch, you're just waiting for your miler to have some success. It might be Andy Bayer this year, which Kevin has at has fourth. So he's got Jaeger 1, Hewling 2nd, Cabral 3rd, Bayer 4th, Corey Leslie 5th, dark horse of Deshaun Turner, who, if you remember correctly, made the team in 2013, got hurt last year at Peyton Jordan, I believe it was, and, you know, really wiped out the rest of his season. Craig Forrest, Billy Nelson, Tabor Stevens with an awesome performance this weekend at Stanford. So, Mitch, is this the year that your miler to steeplechaser guy makes it with Andy Bayer?
I'd like to think so. After his first year of getting his feet wet, I'll see myself out. He just seems like the kind of guy. He's got the 5K strength ish. He's got the miler speed. If he can put it all together, I feel like that's just that crew at the Bowerman guys is just steeple for days. It's hard for me to see Don fall out of that just because his 2012 rise was so awesome to watch, and then his 2013 fall was not. But a guy that I keep seeing at the front of races, especially at the miles, Corey Leslie. He's got serious wheels, and he's taken some races out really hard. And if he can just string all together, he's another threat that can be in that mix.
I'm really optimistic for Don Cabral's season. You know, like Mitch mentioned, he had an amazing 2012, and I think last year was kind of a rebuilding year. He took many steps in the right direction, was third at USA's, looks to be running well, did a couple road races, the world's best 10K, and I think he's on the right track. He's
ran the 15K.
Yeah. Yep. So it seems like he's heading in the right direction. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him in the final in Beijing.
Yeah, so I was just going to add to that. Gags is working for Don Cabral. Fourth Milrose 5K, which is actually was really close. It was Lopez and I believe it was Ryan Hill went 1-2. Then it was Suguru, who just joined the Oregon Project. And then it was Don, and he was right there in the mix. It was a close one. He's got his strength work in. You know, he's got the road 10K, the road 15K, 29, 22, and then 44, 47. Now that that's all out of the way, let's see him get, you know, some speed and some water barriers. I'm excited for Don Cabral's 2015 season. And, yeah, I think one is locked in with Evan Jaeger. Dan Hewling, I'd put behind as well, behind Don. Don's my number two. Now, this is where it gets a little bit interesting, and we could kind of pair the next couple of conversations together with the women's 5K and the women's 10K, because a lot of the names could overlap. So what we have as of right now, in it's hard to tell what events people are doing. Molly Huddle is an option for the 5K. So is Kim Conley. We got Laura Thwaite in here as well for the 5K. Emily Sisson just off, you know, indoors. She's also in the mix. Abby D, who is, you know, Olympic trials, almost surprised there. Now we've got, and if we look at the 10K, same name, Conley and Huddle, then, you know, Shalane Flanagan might come back and run. So let's start off with the 5K, where let's have the conversation. The conversation should be, what do we think Molly Huddle's focus should be in 2015?
Well, given the fact that she's only run the 5,000 at championship meets, I think the 10K is worth exploring this season, see how it goes. Given next year will be the big decision. She certainly can double next year. I think she probably should. But just given the fact she hasn't done the 10K at a world or Olympic level, it's a good year to kind of give that one a shot.
I talked to Molly last year before Peyton Jordan returned that 10K, and just seeing her run the half recently, the 10K is a race where you just, if it comes down to it, I think Kim Connolly said this, but you know, you have to be able to close in that last 15. I think she might have said like 4:10 or something really quick, but if Molly's got the strength to hang in there, and so I think we've seen her at her, well, she's still going up, but last year she was just off the front. I think there's more room to gain in the 10K, just from a tactical standpoint, and so I would take her out of the 5K conversation.
Right, and I think in the 10K she would definitely make it at least really interesting with Shalane Flanagan if she comes back and runs track after Boston. Shalane Flanagan won't be running alone. I think Molly Huddle could hang with her for a bit. So I'm with you guys, 10K for...
Actually, I think Molly beats Shalane on the track right now pretty easily.
Yeah, and, you know, it's we'll see how Shalane's legs, you know, turn over after Boston as well. So, but if we had to, I guess Molly Huddle would be the lock, not a lock, but the number one girl for the 10K.
Favorite. Yeah.
Then we'd go Shalane. And then number three would be, you know, the 2013 champ, Kim Conley, probably, over someone like Jordan Hesse, who'd probably be the fourth girl out. another name out there, Kara Goucher. If she's talked about coming back and running track. She wants to drop some PRs. She was second in 2013. She could come back. That's another option that's out there. And then collegiates, you know, we've got Emma Bates also in the mix. But, you know, going back to the 5K, Mitch, would your girl Lauren make the team probably as a third, or just because of, you know, process of elimination?
Process of elimination. She doesn't want to move up to 10K just yet, though I think it's also a better bet for her. And this is Laura 3, by the way, for those who don't know who my girl isn't. But yeah, just process of elimination, unfortunately.
Yeah, but she'd probably make the 5, right? Wouldn't you think?
The team?
Yep.
Hard to say, just because when we're talking about who's going to run it, you know, maybe Shannon decides to run it, and then you have someone like, I don't know, then maybe like Mackie would run it, or Mariel Hall, who was there last year.
Gabe Grunewald. Yeah.
You got a bunch of women who are under that 5'10", near that 5'10" range, and so, yeah, I don't know. That one's actually kind of tough.
Someone we haven't mentioned is multi-time NCAA champion Abby DiAgostino in her first pro season, who we didn't really see race in the fall and in the winter. That's pretty concerning to me. I think I saw in an interview that she had a SI joint injury, which is something that I have been dealing with personally for many years. And it's no joke, and it really messes with a lot of your mechanics, your ability to do speed work. It's really concerning to me. It's an injury that doesn't really just go away after rest or treatment. So certainly hoping for the best for her. She's a great talent, but I have a lot of concerns there about her.
Working with Coogan, I mean, Coogan always seems to find a way somehow. Now that she's, you know, no more school, all focus on running, you know, and they've been working out in, like, Colorado and all these. She's been doing a big stint at altitude, so I think Abby should be fine, and hopefully we'll see her return. Now, we have kind of a similar situation with the men's 5 and 10K, because we see guys like Galen Rupp double. So, Mitch, are we going to recycle the Rupp-Legat boxing photo that you put together as the pretty much the safe 1-2 bets for the 5K?
That's a good one. That was a really good photo. I didn't do it myself, so I can't take credit for it, but I'm particularly proud of it. And I saw there was a like Runner's World article by Tony Revis about how we should following the boxing model. Been there, done that. We should max out on that. That being said, yeah, Legat, Rupp. I forgot their head-to-head. It's like Legat dropped out of Monaco, maybe. So they're like 13, and Legat's like 13-2 against Rupp. But a guy that I'm not totally. If there was like a 2K race, he'd be perfect for him. Is Lopez Lamont. I'm just not super sold on him in that third spot. I would a guy like Mead, Bumbalo, who are just on the outside, but a guy who's been there is Ryan Hill, and we've seen what he can do in a fast race. I've been sold on him ever since that 3K in Boston where he hung on Gebre Meskel and Gebre Wet, and so anytime he can be there when it's fast, he can be there when it's slow. He's my third guy.
One, my dark horse is the Oregon Duck, Eric Jenkins. I'm really high on him right now after his indoor season. He, in my opinion, is in the mix with some of the best U.S. Collegians of all time. Your Chris Derricks, your Galen Rupps, your Chris Zielinskis. He has PRs that match with those guys. He just hasn't really appeared until, you know, the last couple months or so. I'm really high on him. If not in the mix this year, certainly once he graduates and has a full season to just train for outdoors, I think 2016 he'll be a guy who 5 or 10K will be in the mix.
Yeah, and I was just about to say, you could flip the coin both ways with him, with the 5 or the 10. But I think it might have been in a text you sent me probably before Stanford, and a question we wanted to ask Lopez out there was, you know, what his focus was going to be on the season. And also, I mean, if it's the 5K, his PR should be, I think, a little bit better after, you know, that focus and how well he's done there for a bit. You did bring up a good point, you know, before we started recording the show, because I said, you know, a guy like True or Hassan Mead deserves to be up there. But, you know, they're really good in that. They were really great in that Peyton Jordan race last year, which was paced. But world, you know, a championship is a little different. and they didn't really have it in 2013. I think that's also the first time that they were really big contenders for that third spot. So they've got that learning thing. They've got that race out of the way now, and they've learned from their mistakes. They're not going to leave it to a kick and, you know, hand it over to someone like Ryan Hill. I think this year will be different at the U.S. Championships. And, you know, I like Ben True. Ben True's going to make either the 5K team or the 10K team this year. He was injury, you know, the injury bug struck him last year. I think he seems to have gotten that all out of the way. But yeah, same thing we saw, you know, there's a lot of names here that overlap. So I think, the marathon is, you know, something that we don't have to touch on here because USATF is going to select those names. But I think that kind of does it. We've gotten from 800 all the way up to 10K with the U.S. Championship, Beijing preview, power rankings show. So be sure to check these out on Sporting News on Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll have the men on Tuesday, women on Wednesday. So we want to thank Kevin Liao for joining us on the podcast this week. Mitch Kastoff, as always. And we'll catch you again next week. And we might have another special guest. P.S. Liu Zhang decided to retire. So there goes my bold prediction 2015.
Congrats, Alex.